This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 31st, 2026. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 450. On this edition of the Breaker.News podcast, I speak with Professor Laurie Troutman, the director of the Border Policy Research Institute at Western Washington University, about FIFA World Cup. Vancouver and Seattle are the two closest host cities across a border. What does it mean for the region? And how much is it actually costing taxpayers in British Columbia? Well, I tried to find out. I went to the news conference held by NDP Jobs Minister Ravi Kallon and NDP Tourism Minister Ann Kang. With less than 2 weeks until FIFA World Cup 26, BC Tourism Minister Ann Kang and Jobs Minister Ravi Kallon revealed the cost of hosting 7 matches at BC Place and a fan festival at the PNE is now up to $729 million. Back in 2022, the all-in cost was around $240 million. The NDP government claims the net cost could be under $100 million, but that relies on collecting an accommodation tax in Vancouver until 2030. Here are highlights of the May 29th news conference in Vancouver, followed by my interview with Carson Binda, the BC director of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation.
We're expecting 350,000 fans at BC Place throughout the tournament, plus thousands more at the FIFA Fan Festival Vancouver at the PNE.
Not only is the province's total net cost projections for hosting the World Cup are about $31 million lower than originally expected, we also expect $1 billion in GDP growth as a result of the investments, and we're keeping that momentum rolling.
The world will be watching, and British Columbia will be ready. Ready to deliver, ready to welcome, and ready to turn this moment into a lasting benefit for people throughout the province.
I heard time and time again, residents are feeling priced out of actually enjoying this this tournament. So how can your government justify spending nearly $700 million on a hypothetical economic boom?
Thank you so much for this question. And I think we need to look at this from many points of views. As we are, Minister Kallon and I are both responsible for economic growth, either in trade diversification or in the growth of our tourism sector. When we are planning major events like this, this is one of the pillars that we have in our economic strategy. When people come and they bring their monies and spend it here, when we see opportunities of diversifying our trade, we see economic growth and we see a growth in our GDP. And with this money that we are making for the province, we're able to invest either in our capital projects or programming which seniors, kids, schools need. And so we need to work at this from all fronts.
Follow up.
It's not whether you want to grow the economy or provide important services. It's both. We must grow the economy, create good paying jobs, increase revenues so that we can continue to do the things that we're doing. We're building long-term care homes at record paces. In fact, the highest amount of construction we're seeing in that space right now. Not only that, but the minister also mentioned that more than 40% of the costs for the World Cup so far that we project is coming from tourists that are visiting and paying the cost through the tax at the hotel. So we need to continue to find opportunities to grow the economy so that we can provide long-term care opportunities, expand our health care, expand the opportunities for education for young people. We need to do both, and that's what this initiative is about.
I have Bob Mackin with the Breaker.News. I compared some of the numbers in the 2025 report with today's report, and I noticed that under other, it's substantially higher, about $86 million for other. It doesn't explain what other means. Maybe double last year's estimate. But for the City of Vancouver estimates, it's gone down 14%. So why is the City of Vancouver revenue lower this year? And what is the other and why is that higher?
Well, thank you so much for that question. And so I understand that just moments ago, you received a technical briefing from my deputy minister. These are very technical line-to-line items, I think, would be best referred to him. So I'll get you connected.
Briefed on that number, and do you know the number? This is your portfolio.
We can get that for them.
Okay. So this question will be best directed to the City of Vancouver, as it is the line item.
It's in your report released to us today. So do you know what's in your report released to us today?
We will get the City of Vancouver to get in touch with you.
Okay. And the report also says that the net cost of
the Fan Festival is $26 million. What is the gross cost of the Fan Festival? What is the province's funding formula? How much is the province putting into the Fan Festival? And why in this report is the Peony Amphitheatre not actually included as a cost? Because it is necessary for hosting this event, and it's on the schedule to host this event. I remember back before the Olympics, the NDP properly held the BC Liberals' feet to the fire and noted that the convention center next door, Sea Sky Highway, and other infrastructure was an Olympic cost. So why is the Peony Amphitheatre not a World Cup cost?
Thank you so much. And so this is an aggregate cost that we have come up with. And line-by-line items would be a technical briefing. So we could get the Deputy Minister's office to get in touch with you.
This is
so the technical briefing that you just had was the opportunity to ask those questions. Right now we're talking about the cost estimates and political direction and the work that all of the host committees are doing together as partnerships.
Member Abbey, about the Peony Amphitheatre being a World Cup cost.
I can just share with you that you're asking about a cost specifically to the City of Vancouver. I appreciate you have an interest on that, and we can get the City of Vancouver to get that for you. But the investment into the amphitheater by the City of Vancouver and the need for that is going to have a legacy well beyond the Games. I wouldn't say that it was built for the World Cup, but it's been built for bringing more tourists and more economic opportunities to the Peony Grounds. It's going to have a legacy for years into the future.
But how much
any more? Next reporter, please. Next. Next reporter, please.
I note in the revenues, there's no mention of taxes from FIFA. Do you expect BC to recoup any corporate income tax from FIFA? If not, why not? And if so, is that going to be an appreciable source of revenue?
So that's pretty broad because there's a lot of FIFA-related events. I assume you're talking about just the stadium piece, and perhaps, Mark, we can get the technical team, to get you the breakdown of where the taxes would apply and where perhaps they may not. But we don't have the technical details around that right now.
Mike, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, I mean, FIFA's for-profit corporation in Canada, its revenues, do you expect that it will book profits in BC that your province can tax?
I'm not sure if they'll be booking profits. I can't give you the details of that question right now because I don't know the exact numbers. I can say that there are significant tax revenues that will be coming to the province through, as we've already talked about, through hotel taxation, through dollars invested in our community, people coming in. We expect a significant impact, and we've projected that to be about $1 billion for the province. And but we'll get you the details on what those, arrangements around specific maybe stadium-related ones you have. We don't have that answer for you right now.
Joining me on the podcast is Carson Binda, the BC Director of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. In reaction to the May 29th announcement by the NDP government of some of the numbers behind the costs of hosting FIFA World Cup here in British Columbia, the 7 matches at BC Place Stadium, and the FIFA Fan Festival and other events around those. Now, Carson, they say that the cost is now as much as $729 million, but they claim the net cost, after all the revenue comes in, they say, will be much less. They're relying heavily on the 2.5% accommodation tax, but that only applies to City of Vancouver.
Yeah, Bob, look, the costs have gone up dramatically to host just a handful of games for this FIFA World Cup. Let's hop in the time machine and go back to 2023 when politicians were telling us this would cost somewhere between $230 to $240 million. Now they've come back and said these games could cost up to $729 million. Bob, when you do the math, that works out to a 217% increase in the cost to host these FIFA World Cup soccer games. So it's good that we have some updated numbers from the province today, but it's absolutely unacceptable that these costs have escalated so dramatically, leaving taxpayers with a much bigger bill.
Yeah, the original all-in price was $240 million way back in 2022 when BC decided to get back into this game.
Yeah, it's eye-watering amounts of money. And when you see how that security spending is actually being spent, I think taxpayers are right to have some questions. Weeks before the match, VPD officers have been using their time, taxpayer money, closing roads, despite kickoff not happening until June. Big stretches of Pacific Boulevard here in Yale Town have been closed down since last week. We've seen big spending on security, on motorcades and police escorts for FIFA bigwigs, but we've also seen a lot of spending on pointless waste. We've seen murals repainted on Vancouver City streets and sidewalks. We've seen the grass pitch or the artificial turf pitch at BC Place ripped out, replaced with a temporary grass pitch that they're tearing up at the end of these games, only to put back a new turf field. So time and time again, we've just seen ridiculous waste with these FIFA World Cup games. And that's the big factor that's driving up these costs for taxpayers.
It also doesn't show us how the costs are being carried. How much is the province spending? How much is the city spending? This project, the Fan Festival, was supposed to be the city's responsibility. BC Place Stadium, that is the province's responsibility, but there's a bit of a blurring of the lines at Hastings Park, especially as they're rushing to finish the $183 million P&E Amphitheater, which my question, which was not answered by Ravi Karlan, to my satisfaction at least, is that a FIFA cost? Because that building is on a schedule to host the most important fan event.
Well, Bob, there's been such a shocking lack of transparency and accountability from the province and from the city of Vancouver around questions just like that. What is going into these calculations? Who is covering various aspects of these bills? And I'm glad you brought up the points about hotels. We've already heard that hotel bookings are down 20% this summer compared to last summer. That suggests FIFA isn't dragging in tourists from around the world. Rather, it's pushing away folks who would otherwise be coming to Vancouver in the summer. And when you look at FIFA's demands, specifically restrictions around other sporting and cultural events, it makes sense that folks aren't booking up hotel rooms in the city this summer. Things like the Dragon Boat Festival, fireworks, Italian Day on the Drive, these are all events that have been canceled or dramatically pared down, largely because of FIFA. So we're not seeing the promised tourism boom that the politicians liked to promise. Instead, we are just being left with massive cost escalations and more questions than answers.
Another thing we don't have right now, we don't have a detailed business plan, and we don't have a line by line item of the costs and of any revenue that's going to come in. They're not showing us that.
Yeah. And these are exactly the types of documents that we need to be able to hold government accountable. We need to see what the business plan is, what the line by line spending is, how our money is being used at the end of the day. There's no reason for the government to be withholding those kinds of documents if they exist at all.
And finally, May 28th was the last day of the spring sitting of the legislature, the day when they also rubber stamped with the vote by a majority, with the speaker as well chiming in on that in the vote, to amend the Freedom of Information Law, to weaken the Freedom of Information Law. And the very next day is when they decide to tell us how much we're spending on the World Cup. What does this say about the current NDP government under Premier David Eby, that on one day they're taking steps towards secrecy and the next day they're showing us information about costs, about expenses with BC taxpayers that should have been shown much sooner?
Yeah, so the NDP government's assault on the public's right to know through Bill 9 is absolutely unacceptable. They took the public's freedom of information rights and threw them in a black hole. That's unacceptable. How it ties in with this FIFA expenditure. Time and time again, we've seen government try to dodge accountability when it comes to World Cup spending. I think releasing these newest cost figures just a day after this legislative session closes for the year is a naked attempt to avoid accountability. David Eby didn't want to be questioned about these dramatic cost overruns in question period. They didn't want to give British Columbians the chance to get accountability here. Bill 9 makes it harder for journalists, for taxpayers, for advocates to get records from the government. It waters down a number of the government's duties when it comes to responding to freedom of information requests. And this was a bill that was pushed through the legislature despite intense opposition from the public. The Canadian Taxpayers Federation delivered a petition with more than 10,000 signatures from British Columbians calling on government to end its assault on democracy and cancel Bill 9. Instead, and this was unfortunate, we saw independent MLAs like Amelia Boultby help the NDP manage Bill 9 through committee instead of doing the right thing and opposing it from the get-go.
We're welcoming back Professor Laurie Troutman from the Border Policy Research Institute at Western Washington University in Bellingham. It's the only one of its kind along the border, researching issues about the border, about cross-border issues, whether it's business, transportation, security, whatever you have it. Laurie is a font of information, especially at this time when we're in the second year of the Trump trade war. The other variable, June and July, the FIFA World Cup is coming to both Vancouver and Seattle. These two host cities are the two closest cross-border host cities of all the 16 cities that are involved in this tournament, primarily hosted in the United States, but Mexico and Canada as junior partners, the biggest World Cup in history. How many people are coming? Where are they coming from?
Yeah, this has been a tough question to answer, even from the very beginning of when we knew where the FIFA games were going to be played, because there was a lot of people who said this is going to be so huge. It's, you know, being billed as the biggest tournament ever. But then here in this region, there was definitely some skeptics who said, well, if we look back to the Olympics in 2010 in Vancouver, we expected this huge cross-border surge and we didn't really see it. It didn't materialize. But that was a very different context. First of all, that's winter, which is the lowest sort of travel season as it is. And then we had the games, which were only on one side of the border, the events. So this is a kind of unprecedented situation for us, particularly here in this region, where we have these huge global games happening on both sides of the border. And the way that they've been scheduled, of course, is many of them alternate between Seattle and Vancouver. Certainly knowing which teams are playing on which days has helped us to get a little bit of a better sense of how we might see the potential for people who, let's say, fly to Vancouver to see Australia play, might want to drive down to Seattle and see Australia play as well. So, you know, we know that there is a handful of teams and games that are like that. Australia is one. I would guess that draws a pretty high crowd. We have seen advanced air bookings out of YVR and SeaTac up for Australians. So that's a pretty good handle that we know there's probably going to be a surge of Australians. Australians have a pretty easy time crossing the Canada-US border. They'll need an ESTA, but that's a pretty easy thing to obtain. We also have teams like Belgium. We have seen advanced air bookings for Belgium sort of at a bump out of SeaTac, but not out of Vancouver. That may just be because the connection to SeaTac is better. Maybe that means people from Belgium will be flying into SeaTac to watch the games and then driving up to Vancouver, flying out of Vancouver. But then we have teams like Egypt, Qatar, Iran, for example, in the US that are, it's really difficult to kind of get a handle on how many fans at least might be traveling for those games. We do know the teams will, of course, have to move across the border. And you might think, oh, well, there's not that many players on a team. how much volume would that actually be? But one example of that is the Qatari team, which will be flying to San Francisco for a game, flying to Vancouver for a game, and then driving from Vancouver to Seattle, has informed U.S. Customs and Border Protection that they're going to have, I think it was 56 buses coming just for that team and their whole entourage that travels with them. So some groups we know we have a slightly better handle on in those terms of those volumes, and some of them, like I said, are real unknowns.
So the Qataris, even though they have their own airway, Qatar Airways, which is also a FIFA sponsor, they're going to drive motor coaches, I assume, from Vancouver to Seattle for that leg of their tournament.
That's what we have been told, and I'm not sure who is on those buses. There may be some kind of extended fan base that is able to sort of travel with the team in that leg, but yes, they will be primarily going by motor coach.
Yeah, it's a May 12th news conference at BC Play Stadium. Premier David Eby pinpointed Qataris as a target for British Columbia's economic development and investment attraction program. And there has been talk of private jets, creating more business at YVR and also smaller regional airports that will service private charter jets. I've even heard from some sources of perhaps super yachts.
Yeah, I mean, what I heard just yesterday from the BC Hotel Association was they were sort of scaled back their forecasts. I think they said that they're expecting or somewhere in the high 80s to maybe 90% of occupancy for June, which is a bit lower than they had originally anticipated. And then July looking a little bit better, closer to kind of the 90s. Range. But the question about expendable income is a very interesting one because, you know, as you mentioned at the outset, the tickets are really expensive. Air travel has become more expensive. Everything's become more expensive, right? And those of us here in the border community, at least on the US side, I think there was sort of this anticipation early on that, well, Vancouver's going to be really expensive. So maybe there'll be some overflow for people who either are coming up from Seattle or are already in Vancouver, want to be close to the BC Place Stadium to watch the games, but they don't want to spend the money to stay in the Lower Mainland, so they'll pop down here to Whatcom County. We haven't really seen that play out yet either. So like you said, it may be that there's sort of, because the cost of these games is so high, there's these alternative forms of accommodation that we're not kind of see play out in the hotel occupancy. The airport is another interesting one. They have also scaled back their original forecasts a little bit lower from what they had intended. My understanding, and I'm not an expert in this subject, is that some of those private jets, they don't actually know when they're arriving until maybe a week before, but it's not sort of an advanced air booking scenario. So it's a little bit hard to know what those numbers are.
What are you hearing for ticket sales estimates?
Early April, we got some numbers. So these are a little bit dated, but we saw that around 11,000 tickets for the Seattle matches were sold to BC residents, and then around 4,000 tickets for the Vancouver matches were sold to Washington residents. It's very limited data. That's the only sort of figures that I have right now. I do think it's interesting to note that, again, this is early April data, that of course, the number one international market for the Seattle games is Canada. And then the number one international market for the Vancouver games is the United States. So, you know, that's not necessarily BC Washington, but we are going to have a lot of cross-border travel between the United States and Canada because, you know, we're easy to get to each other's games. We're not coming from far away. So I think we can expect a lot of movement.
Are those estimates for the whole phase of matches, or is that per match, the 4,000 versus 10,000?
That's for the phases, but probably not the final ones that haven't been decided yet.
And both cities will have alternatives to fans who don't have tickets. Here in Vancouver, the Peony Grounds at Hastings Park, that is the FIFA Fan Festival. There's a few smaller events, the Shipyards in North Vancouver especially, where Canada Soccer House will be a great public gathering place. Those will be magnets as well, perhaps, to people that might want to experience the World Cup without actually getting into the stadiums. Are you seeing any potential for those to be draws for cross-border travel?
Yes, absolutely. Even Bellingham here, we are an official fan zone. So we have a number of activities and showings, all of them free with, like you said, the goal of sort of drawing not just the community together, but also people who may not want to or be able to attend the games in Seattle and Vancouver. So that's another layer that makes it really challenging to estimate the cross-border volumes, because the ticket sales are sort of one piece of the story. But even those don't really tell us who's coming from where, because those tickets can be resold, which makes it very complicated. And then the other part, as you mentioned, is those sort of fans who just want to be part of the action, who are going to go to these other events, who probably live fairly locally or regionally, so may not be necessarily making hotel bookings, but seeing these event attendance as day trips. But I do think that that will be a draw, because the games are so expensive, and because there is so much of these other things going on that have really been, I think, drawing in people, at least here in Bellingham. The community is very, very excited about that.
Do you think the people who are interested in the World Cup, who want to make the investment of time and money to travel and get tickets, would have all been decided many, many months ago, and there would be very little chance of a last minute surge?
I think so. I mean, I think the people that I talk to who are sort of hanging on for last minute tickets are the ones that live in the region already. So there's very little planning that has to be involved in getting to a game, right? You don't even have to get a hotel room. Maybe you drive down to Seattle or Vancouver and come home the same day. But, you know, we're less than a month out now, I think. What is the first game? Is June?
Yeah, June 11th is when the tournament starts. Okay. June 13th is Vancouver's first.
So it's hard to imagine that, you know, if you hadn't already made these plans, that you're going to jump up and make them now. My sense is we're going to see fewer visitors and fewer people than we maybe had anticipated. But there, again, there still will be a surge. There will be more people. There will be more, you know, hotels and flights. I know Amtrak, for example, some of the Amtrak trains on game days are already sold out. So we do know there is an kind of heightened demand for these services.
And then the big question mark would be, as there always is for mega events like this, and it'll be a question at the border as well, the security and transportation inside the host cities, especially the closer you get to the stadium, the more transportation barriers there will be.
Part of one of our questions in this last survey, border survey that we did, was asking people if they were aware of the World Cup games in Seattle and Vancouver, and if they were planning to cross for any FIFA-related event, not just to have tickets to the game. And most of them who were aware said, no, we're not going to cross during that time. So that gives me the impression that the people who typically might cross the border, who are still crossing the border, are going to forego those trips during that time, specifically to avoid what they probably see is just more congestion and longer wait times at the border. The security piece is interesting. I know in Bellingham, for example, I think there's only one large fan zone activity that's showing the games, and that had to be limited mainly because of the cost of security, because pulling police from these other sort of places that they're being pulled to became too financially prohibitive. So we sort of don't have enough of these people normally, and now they're being stretched, you know, even more thin. At the border, we know both Canada Border Services Agency and U.S. Customs and Border Protection are bringing in a considerable number of additional staff, so they'll be fully staffed at the border. So I think, you know, they're positioned as well as they can to continue to process people as efficiently as they can. But certainly, you know, this these heightened challenges are going to create more congestion, which, you know, as you said, might sort of cause people to stay home who normally would be engaged in activity. Now, will this increased visitation balance that out? That's a really difficult question to answer.
Yeah, the security around the border is going to be key. At the Vancouver International Security Summit, John Brewer, one of the top RCMP officials here in British Columbia, said one of the things that keeps him awake at night is border security. Where do you see that aspect of it, the uncontrolled border and potential for illegal crossings?
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to approach that question. Maybe I'll take the angle of just Canada and the US working together in those spaces, which has long been a very successful collaboration. We have integrated border enforcement teams. This is something about IBETS. They started here in this region, basically as a way to bring together different agencies that work on the border, because of course you have RCMP and, you know, all these different, it's not just the border agencies, bringing them together to actually speak to each other and collaborate on things. And so in a way, I actually think amidst all of these other challenges in the broader Canada-US relationship, that security relationship between the US and Canada, particularly on the ground, is one that remains strong and really successful. And I think especially here in this region, our agencies have very good relationships, very good networks, and I think that will continue throughout the World Cup. I think it's something we can point to that still is very functional in the relationship and serves both sides of the border very well. You know, particularly the example of human trafficking. It's really important for the agencies to work together, and this is something that obviously our communities both can support. The question of, you know, sort of people inadvertently crossing into the United States between the ports of entry is a really challenging time for that kind of scenario. I do hope, and I sort of have faith in our local border agency professionals, that there will be sort of more of a understanding approach than a reactive approach. And I think that, you know, given that we're all sort of preparing for these visitors, most of whom do not have any malintent, that the officers will be able to apply sort of more of a regional lens than what we've seen, like you said, in other places where it's been very reactive and very controversial.
And finally, one last question about the fact that you've got U.S., Canada, Mexico having to work together to pull this off so that this is a successful tournament, despite all the questions and worries. Could there be a bit of a silver lining here, that could this accelerate free trade talks? The U.S., Mexico, Canada free trade agreement is in negotiations. It's for review.
It could, but I am not optimistic that it would rise to that level. I think locally and regionally, preparing for these games absolutely has been an opportunity for different groups, different stakeholders, different entities to have a reason to continue to collaborate and continue to have these discussions despite, you know, the broader stuff that we are facing. I think we have really seen that we can still work together here in this region, and we'll continue to do so. At the broader, tri-national, or even bi-national scale, I'm not quite so optimistic.
Well, thanks again for joining me on the podcast. Lori Troutman, professor with the Border Policy Research Institute at Western Washington University in Bellingham, Washington.
Thanks, Bob.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 31st, 2026. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. As always, send me news tips and comments to bob@thebreaker.news. You can find us all over social media. On X, it's The Breaker News. And you can subscribe to the free newsletter. Go to bobmackin.substack.com. And that's where you can also become a member of The Breaker.News podcast. If you subscribe, you get early access to podcasts.